primary ignition.
This is Star Wars.
Look out!
Core World News.
You may fire when ready.
From the bright center of the galaxy, I'm Grex Kondak. You're listening to Core World News, your whole net news service providing in-depth coverage of all the latest stories from every sector of the galaxy. Now, a news segment rundown for June 22nd, 2023. Kyber Crystal Comics Corner. Now, we have Ben, Grant, and Adam to begin the discussion of a very special Star Wars tale.
Thank you, Grex, and everything remains to be fine. In the newsroom, nothing negative going on.
Meltdowns.
It is definitely
no M&A.
not a hostile work environment. I assure everyone, it's a wonderful place to work.
Yeah,
no toxicity here whatsoever. Anyway,
no
so,
corporate greed.
It's nope, it's all good. Yeah, so welcome everyone. We have. I'm trying to figure out how to do this. I gave y'all homework to do last week, and I kind of want to start with the homework. And then we'll kind of drift into what we're going to talk about this week, because to do it the other way around,
you know what I love to do,
might
guys,
be a bit of a spoiler.
Start with the homework.
Yeah, start with the homework.
Yeah. I love those, that sentence.
Can you tell what I do for my day job?
Yeah. Obviously, you're not a golfer.
Mm-mm. Obviously.
Because, I was blown away, Adam. Honestly.
Yeah. So
I didn't know this existed. It was almost
you're welcome.
Making me watch the holiday special again. Yeah. I'm so happy to know about this now and to be so enriched by this lore. That I can't wait to talk about.
So to remind everyone, again, this is from my completionist brain. So I remember reading this. This is a fever dream where I actually had to go back and be like, was this a thing that actually happened, or was I imagining this? But it's an issue from Star Wars Tale from 2004. So it is no longer canon, nor was it even canon when it came out. Like that's how we're talking about. This is not a canon tale, but it's Star Wars Tale often told these kind of off the beaten track, could have happened, might not have happened type of storytelling, which is fun. And it reminds me of almost Star Trek or Star Wars Visions, right? Like we need more of this, yeah. Like just let's have some fun with these characters. And in Star Wars Tales, Star Wars Tales was this kind of book of, would have like five or six comics in it, short little comics. And I specifically gave you Into the Great Unknown from Star Wars Tales number 19, and it's a Han Solo and Chewbacca story where they get a little bit lost, don't they?
Sure, you know, just getting pursued by multiple Star Destroyers and X-Wings, as one does.
Yep.
And just, you know, punch it, which they do all the time. They're like, we got to do hyperspace blind, and I'm like, yeah, that pretty much happens.
Yeah. And this shows you
always makes a smooth landing. We know it for that reason.
So this is, yeah. So this starts out with, like you said, they're getting pursued. They don't have time to do calculations. They go in the hyperdrive, and I love the hyperspace idea of just like, we are always warned what could go horribly wrong.
Yes.
Right. And my favorite scene is that they come out and it says, the story starts out in a galaxy, far, far away. And they hit hyperspace, and the next bubble that's up is not a galaxy, not so, or it's, I think it says not so far away, right? Is the next thing we see when they come out of hyperspace. Yeah, yes. no longer far away.
Yeah. Yeah, come out, and we see some celestial bodies that are familiar to Earthlings. Mm-hmm. Love their sort of interpretation of the solar system as they're coming in. They're like, he's like, looks like there's some life on one of these rocks, you know. Yeah, actually very, you know, very tone perfect for both characters in this. And and then of the obligatory crash landing because it's the poor Falcon. That thing hasn't used its like landing gear in like six movies.
Right. And land in a place that I think Han says looks a lot like Endor.
Yes.
It's Muir Woods.
Yes. Yeah. There's some Muir Woods.
Northern NorCal in just above San Francisco. It's.
Yeah. So that's the thing. They've landed on Earth, and one of my favorite things is that one of the weirdest things about this whole thing is it's we're told that Star Wars takes place in a galaxy a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. This actually, again, not canon, but this actually gives you specifically
how long ago it was.
Was it 200 years?
126 years.
But that so. There's that reference, there's a crossover reference there, but isn't this to be explained interference happened in like the 40s or the 60s.
Yeah, it's got to be. Well, I'll say why. Yeah, we'll I think the data is in a moment. Yeah. So they crash land on Earth in Muir Woods 150 years before now, probably closer to 150 years or more before right now. And they run afoul of some Native Americans who are understandably upset.
Yeah, I mean, when you get a Millennium Falcon that crashed through, they just start firing arrows. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, you know, Han Solo has gotten out of a lot of tight spots in the past, but they pincushion this dude.
Yeah.
And Native Americans doing some history here. It looks like the Coast Miwok tribe was in the Marin area.
Oh, all right. Coast Miwok. Wow. You did some homework. Look at that. I like it.
Wow. And there's, I mean,
Miwok, Ewok? Did we find some connective tissue here?
That's fascinating. There's no such thing as a
coincidence
when it comes to Lucas and naming things.
In my experience, there's no such thing as coincidence.
He's an anthropologist, right? So he definitely knows these facts.
So
now we know. I didn't know. I didn't think that you look at what indigenous people lived in that area.
Yeah,
around that time period, and now we connect that name. That's so cool.
That's really funny. That's really interesting. And this thing about the story is there's so many great leaps in it. And like this idea that they end up in Earth is like, I mean, it could happen, right? We don't know. I don't know how you can travel through galaxies or cross galaxies, but like then to like kill off Han Solo is just wild.
That
like,
was you're just staggering, like, oh, honestly.
Yeah. Right.
I was like, wait, what? Yeah.
And again, just remind everyone, this is like maybe 6 pages long. The story, it is not long. And they are taking every page as a new giant leap in terms of logic and like believability.
Right. And then
we see Chewie kind of grieving Han Solo. Han asks to be taken back to the ship, basically like just lay me down in my ship. I want to die there, kind of. And we hear Chewie just do his usual growl and scream. And we get one word from the Native Americans. Did you catch the word they said?
Sasquatch.
Sasquatch. So that's where we get the legend. The Sasquatch now comes from Chewbacca. So anytime you hear Bigfoot or whatever, it's because 120 or 150 years ago, Native Americans saw Chewbacca, and that's why we have Bigfoot.
Such a good idea. Like that idea is gold. I love that idea. And like, I don't normally like meta stuff. Like, I don't think any of it's really that tasteful. And when it's like overly meta and they're hitting you over the head with it, I really don't like it. I love this level of meta. I absolutely adore this story, given that almost the meta elements don't meet. You know what I mean? One's dead, has been dead for a long time. And I just love that idea. And then obviously Sasquatch and baking that into the story and being a reason for, we'll talk about it, for someone who is getting their another movie in their franchise this Friday. It comes a trot down.
Yeah. Which so you get. So I remember reading this and going, I remember thinking back to this. And so in the next page, you just see an explorer. It's 126 years later. So we're thinking sometimes in the relatively current era ish. We'll talk about when in a moment. And we see he has a Native American guide and there's a young boy following him. But for this whole page, he's in shadow. Right. We have like word balloons covering his face. And so part of me was wondering, as I was reading this, going, oh, are they just alluding to who this character could be? Like, did they ever actually come out and name it? And then sure enough, you flip to the next and last page, and there's no questioning. It is Indiana Jones and Short Round.
Yeah, hurry up, Shorty. It's like the first thing I think when you reach something. Yeah, it's so cool.
Shorty calls him Dr. Jones. Like, this is Indiana Jones discovering Han Solo's body in the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah. So cool to find the ship and a person in there, like a human in the ship. Like that is, that's such a fun mystery then at that point. And I love it.
Yeah. And that's kind of the tale. That's the end of the tale. Then you flash out and you see Chewie mournfully looking on.
Yeah. Watching them as they do that. And he is
so depressing.
Yeah.
Right. And that would be the real interaction that you'd want to see, right? Like Chewie seeing Dr. Jones, Indiana Jones, and being like, what the heck? Like it's the same face.
Yeah.
I thought they were going to play on that in some way. Like, it'd almost be funnier if like I you know, obviously I love the tale that it for what it is, but like I would almost like if Chewie and Han landed in like the pre-Gamorrean era and like are the responsible for like human life on Earth, and like that's why Dr. Jones looks like
Like seeding Earth, something
crazy like genetics.
Well, you could play this story out further where you have Chewbacca, because he sees someone who looks exactly like Han Solo, him chasing him down because he's so happy. But Dr. Jones doesn't speak, speak Wookiee. So you just have this growling beast running after him, and Chewie's just really excited to see him. And Dr. Jones is running from the Sasquatch, right. And then you have the tail of the Sasquatch, right? Right.
Like, then Chewbacca just gives him a big hug.
Yeah.
And so he's good. Like, he's killing me. And he's like, no, I just, you look like a puppy to me.
Yeah. So I think we're looking at like 1940s, 1930s or 1940s, because I have to look back at Temple of Doom, but Temple of Doom is the 30s. It's
the first one, right?
It's the first one chronologically. Yeah.
Right. So it would be it was a weirdly exact number too. It's like 128 years or something. Yeah. 127 years.
I'm trying to figure out why they picked that time frame. Yeah.
So 120 years before then. So that's almost 200 years from now. So that's a long time ago, I suppose. I was thinking thousands of years, but okay.
Right, but it's really a long time ago. I guess it is technically a long time ago.
It's a long time for Americans. It's not a long time for Europeans.
But is it Raiders or where we see the stone carvings of C-3PO and R2-D2?
It's Raiders. It's in the Well of Souls, I believe, in Raiders that you actually see C-3PO and R2-D2. Yeah, there's a petroglyph in the background. That's R2-D2 and C-3PO. So I guess this is like, so why'd I have you read this? This is kind of where we're going to go into this episode, is that like we're you know, a mere 4 days away from Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, the fifth and I'm going to say last Indiana Jones movie, or at least Indiana Jones with Harrison Ford. I know nothing about this. No spoilers. I'm not saying Indy dies. I just don't know anything. But other than Harrison Ford, everyone's advertising as this like the final adventure, right? Though this will also be the third movie that I think they've advertised as the final adventure of Indiana Jones. So who knows? We may get a 95-year-old Harrison Ford at some point doing this.
We get an AI Harrison Ford for a prequel or something.
Right. Oh, man. Or we could just have a million of these now because they can just do de-aging and we can fill in all the midpoints. Anyway, it's making myself sad. So, you know, I thought it would just be fun to kind of do a little bit of a freewheeling episode, but talk a bit about Indiana Jones, and we are a Star Wars podcast. So kind of the crossover, the overlap we see between Indiana Jones, because really it's Lucas's, you know, we often think about Spielberg, but this is Lucas's other major franchise, right? Like he wrote all of these, all the first four. He crafted the story, wrote a lot of the first drafts. He has no involvement in this one other than being a producer, which means not much at all, but that's okay, right? He sold all the stuff off, but this is his other baby. And Harrison Ford, he has said time and time again, this is his favorite character to play. This is when he's grumpy about playing Han Solo, it's because he wants to play Indiana Jones.
Right. I remember an interview with Harrison being like, they're like, what's the difference between Harrison Ford and Han Solo? He's like, Han Solo is dumber. He's like a lot dumber. He just sort of lucks into it. And then, you know, Dr. Jones is obviously, you know, can use his wits to get out of tough situations.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's very true. I mean, Star Wars is always my first love, but like right next to it was Indiana Jones. Like I remember when I was a kid, we had like three movies we rented from the video store and my parents would bring me in every week. It'd just be like a negotiation over, we're going to watch this or this. And it was like Temple of Doom. I rented Temple of Doom at least once a month from the video store as a kid. Just that's all I ever wanted to watch was Temple of Doom. And I really think a large proportion of why I have my PhD is because of Indiana Jones. Like to me, a doctor is an adventurer, which is not true at all. But that's to me what I thought was like the greatest adventure was someone who got his PhD.
Hey, if it got you there, that's all that matters. Yeah.
He does know a little bit about everything. I mean, when they do, you know, talk about any sort of artifact, Dr. Jones knows quite a bit. I've always found that compelling. And I love that view of academia, the adventure that's involved there, which very alluring. I love those scenes are so great for character building, too. Just the moments where he's, you know, at the university, you know, in his office, sneaking out, you know, like he just going to be the adventurer that he is. Like, I love the kind of duality of his character explored in that way.
Yeah, and I hope we get... I've been staying relatively spoiler-free. I think I've only seen the ads of Dial of Destiny, and otherwise I've tried to, like, completely disconnect. As close as it feels to me is Star Wars. Like, I am completely disconnected. Like, I'm not reading any early reviews or anything else. Like, I don't want to go in with any preconceived notions and just enjoy it. But I thought, like, a fruitful place to start would be, you know, what do you think when you look at these two franchises with the same... writer creator, right? The big difference is that you have Spielberg directing most of these, but we also know that Spielberg and Lucas are like souls in a lot of ways. But
yeah, and they collaborated a lot on the original trilogy.
Yeah.
Longtime friends, collaborators.
Yeah. And I know Spielberg was quite involved with Revenge of the Sith. Like he was on set quite a bit for Revenge of the Sith, trying to kind of help Lucas kind of land the third one.
Well, yeah, land it. Yeah.
Right, yeah. I think that's why we have Babu Frick survives. Babu Frick survives in Rise of Skywalker because of Spielberg.
Spielberg's like the great film conciliary to all directors. Yeah.
It's the only reason why we have that weird, awkward, hey, when he pops up in Zori Bliss's thing is because when they showed an early cut to Spielberg, Spielberg's only comment was, what happened to Babu Frick?
Did Babu Frick die? Is he okay?
Is he okay? Safe? Yeah. Exactly. So looking kind of at these two franchises, what do you see as like the overlap, or do you see any kind of like connective tissue between what makes a Star Wars and what makes an Indiana Jones?
I think the grand sense of adventure connects the two.
Swashbuckling.
Yeah. Yeah.
Planet hopping and globe trotting, I respectfully are fun design for a narrative. And it looks like, I think both franchises do that. And I think that's what George really tried to capture was new settings, new environments at all times to build that sense of adventure. If you just put people, you know, in Act 1, Act 2, Act 3, if you show something in Act 1 and they go back to that same place in Act 3, the story's scale can feel a little limited. Whereas I think George and Spielberg really wanted to keep throwing us into new environments and having these really fun sort of swashbuckling scenarios, like what Ben's alluding to here.
Yeah, I think that's actually why Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, and don't worry, this is not going to be, we're going to spend an hour beating up on Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, but I think that's why that one's lacking a bit, because if you watch that film, 90% of it takes place in one area.
Yeah, you're right.
Sure, yeah. It's
they go to the jungle, and then 90% of the movie is in the jungle.
You mean just jungle to Hidden Temple, right? Yeah.
Yeah, not, within the jungle, right?
It's not adventure, university, adventure. It's like university, all adventure, and like backloaded,
Yeah, it starts in like desert to university to jungle.
Yeah.
And that's kind of it. Right. And it's just, I feel like I've watched that movie now 7 times because I need to figure that movie out. That is that weird like whale of a movie where I'm just like, I obsess
about
it. What's
so
like,
puzzling about
why
it?
Why doesn't it work?
What is puzzling to you about that movie?
If I knew what that was, if I knew it didn't work as much as I am, it just does not work for me. There are elements, like that's the thing, like there's a lot of things I love in that movie, and then you put it all together and I'm like, yeah, no, this just something about it doesn't feel right, which is weird because you have all the component parts, right? You have Spielberg, you have Lucas, you can't blame it for being like new creators. Like it's not like we can do with the Disney era where we can start talking about, well, this is this person's view and that does that. Like these are the original people doing their view, and it just feels like a weird copy of it. I don't know.
I also think that cinematography, too many heavy hitters. That's and I think when you have that many heavy hitters in a movie and they're all shining and some are being overacting and some are being extremely theatrical,
it weakens the
believability of the adventure. And so I would just say that like having John Hurt, Kate Blanchett, Ray Winstone, and Harrison Ford like sharing the same frame.
And even Shia LaBeouf.
The best idea. And Shia LaBeouf, just given that too, they're all huge titans. You know,
he was huge at that time, right? Which I will say one thing, really going back and rewatching that movie numerous times, Shia LaBeouf to me is not the issue with that movie. I actually do not mind him. The more I watch that movie, I think he does a fine job. Personally, he has some work he needs to be doing.
He checked the boxes, I guess. Like,
The
monkeys, Swinging with the Monkeys was outrageous, but like, other than that,
that's not his fault.
No, but I think that's part of it, right? I think the CGI is a little wonky. I feel like it's like, why are you doing so much CGI? We can do practical, not to be beating that drum, but like it was that weird in between time where they hadn't quite figured out CGI. But I think, Grant, I think you bring an interesting point where it's just like at the time when the other movies came out, none of the other people surrounding Harrison Ford were big name actors. They were like known. They were character actors. Yeah, they were
honestly
big,
modestly well known.
Yeah, but you'd recognize.
Huge. Yeah.
Borrowing a ton from Star Wars, by the way. Like Porkins is all over the first movie. Like you have all these Star Wars actors popping up. But yeah.
There's also, like you were saying, like common threads. There's sort of this like movement where you start in the civilized world, where meaning literally civilized, like by people living in an area. And then you move to the mystical. It's like you travel off into some area and it's like, it's, you know, suddenly it's like this mystical realm that you know, and that's definitely a part of Star Wars that, you know, that'll hook you.
If you break it apart, I mean, Indiana Jones goes through the hero's journey every single movie, right? He starts from a place of like in the known, going to the unknown, not believing, meeting people who eventually believe him. And then he goes, it's a cycle. And then he starts the next movie exactly where he ended, right? Like, I don't believe in any mysticism, even though I've seen hearts ripped out of people. And
it doesn't, he experiences apotheosis in a couple instances too, right?
He's like
possessed and then he comes back.
Especially in you know, Last Crusade, right? Like that should have, I mean, that not should have, I mean, shouldn't say that because I'm so happy we're getting another Indiana Jones, but that was very much the end of that journey, right? Like that riding off the sunset with his dad just felt like, I remember seeing that in the theater at 12 years old, I think it was, and going, oh, that's great. I'll never see another Indiana Jones movie. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, to me, that was so clearly the end of the story. Yeah, right. Even at 12, I realized that's it. I mean, I'm glad we're getting more, but it's just so funny how that happens, right? It's just like, the other thing I think is big, kind of a connect, and we hit on it earlier, is lore, right? Both these movies, both these genres, films franchise. Love lore. Thank you, franchise was the exact word I was looking for. Loves lore and building lore, right?
Yeah, and it's kind of like with Jones, you get a different sort of subsect of different lore each time you get into it, whereas like Star Wars is, I mean, they're different lores as well, really,
but
all pointing towards the same, you know, the Force or something tangentially related.
The lore in Indy just happens to be based on historical lore of our known world, but like still mysticism and things that aren't necessarily proven or known. One other thing that just popped in my head too is, I think we had a reference for this, but just making off the cuff comments about past adventures and other things, right? Like just not over explaining and just seeing like there's this bigger world that we're not involved with. And my thought of that always is like the first movie starts with the Chachupochin temple, I think, where he gets the idol, you know, throw me the whip, I'll throw you the idol.
Yeah.
He ends up leaving and he gets on the plane with Jock, like the pilot of the plane, and he clearly has a relationship with Reggie the snake, but that's it. Like we don't know. They've clearly had past adventures.
Jock is played by Frank Marshall, the producer of that of the film.
Yes, I believe that is correct. I believe I can't 100%. And and Reggie the snake. That's where we first. But it's a great moment. First, we learn that he doesn't like snakes, and just a great cutaway scene. But again, clearly these two have had really big adventures. Opening scene of Temple of Doom. We have, I can't remember the name of his the guy who gets killed at the beginning, but he's like, we've had so many great adventures.
Yeah, right.
And unfortunately, you can't follow me to this last one, which is going off into the unknown, into death.
Great like, moment,
again,
too.
Great moment. Absolutely. Who knows? We've just met this person, but clearly they've had past adventures. Yeah. Like, again, very similar to Star Wars, where they reference things that have happened. You know, the Battle of Tanab, right?
Yeah.
Do you think Temple of Doom steps on Crystal Skull a little bit? Or like, vice versa.
You
know what I mean? Like,
no, I don't, but I'm
Journey into the Jungle. Like,
oh, yeah.
Darker of the Jungle kind of idea.
So here's the problem. Desert, jungle, desert, jungle.
Yeah.
Those are the movies, right? Or desert. Yeah. Desert, jungle, desert, jungle. And I'm like, I wondered in Dial of Destiny, I'm like, don't give us the desert again. Don't give us a jungle again. But I don't know. I think we're going to get one or the two. Same thing we get with Star Wars, right? I mean, we know Lucas loves his deserts.
Yeah, they all do. Yeah. It just looks so good. And like Star Wars just looks so good in a desert.
Yeah.
I
just love that's interesting. And I just love how both Han Solo and Indiana Jones are these like these realists. And I wouldn't say Dr. Jones is as like cynical as Han Solo, but he's definitely a realist, and he's definitely, when he takes the lore, he takes that historical knowledge or you know, biblical text there, or, you know, any whatever he hears about whatever the mystery is that he's investigating, I guess he kind of triangulates different conclusions to what that can be, and doesn't yep. just outright say, oh yeah, this is 100% true and we gotta go get this thing. It's like, no, it could be this, it could be that, it was here at this time, it was in between these dates, it was here, you know, like he really, I don't know, there's, you just trust that character a lot. And I think you trust Han Solo. I think he's meant to be untrustworthy, but I think you trust his cynicism and his realism, his realist approach to things. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. That's a really good point. It's also interesting too, because they both, as you kind of mentioned, they both look for rational explanations for things, right? Like Han Solo will not believe in the Force in the first couple of movies, which doesn't make you wonder, right? Because we get his return in Force Awakens. And at that point he believes in all of it, right? He's like,
it's all true.
It's all true. And I love that's not how the Force works.
And is that not the most Indiana Jones moment in Star Wars?
Yes.
When he says it's all true, and he's sort of, the mystery has been unsolved and uncovered, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. So my question is, like, are we going to meet an Indy in this movie, in Dial of Destiny, that has now reconciled all of these things and knows and truly accepts that there's the mystical out there? I don't know.
Right. I mean, after Last Crusade, he has for sure seen mystical things. You know, Raiders, does he cover his eyes when the arc activates?
He does. Or else okay, he does not,
but fully, I mean, see the supply.
He doesn't mystery. See it, but everyone else is like turned into
right.
Like,
I guess when he does look, they're all melted. I guess,
plausible deniability. However, before that scene, he did see a guy get his heart ripped out and then live, and then that heart.
Yeah.
Set okay, on so fire when the guy gets set on fire. And so, like,
introduced to the supernatural.
Hard to.
He's seen it all at this point.
He also sees an entire village with zero plants, and then comes back a day later, and all of the plants are now bloomed. So, like, there's enough. Like, you can explain only so much with rationalism.
Sure. Yeah. So, Dial of Destiny, I imagine, will dive into some supernatural things. I'm excited. Again, media blackout for myself. I know, Adam, you're on the same media blackout. We know nothing about the film. I guess we've seen some underwater scenes. We could hypothesize Atlantis, you know, we don't know, obviously.
That's all we'll say is everything we're saying is based on sheer, just like, just whatever, like, not based on imagery, anything other than trailers and hopes and thoughts, but that'd be wild if we got Atlantis, but I can't imagine they're actually going to give us Atlantis.
I do have the comics, so I'm just hoping that that's the mystery because I've got that whole Dark Horse set, but it's all right.
Yeah.
It's good.
Actually, so hearkening back to our comic that started this conversation, that's actually one of the quotes that Shorty and Dr. Jones say, is he's like, "This I've never even seen anything this weird in Atlantis." So he's presumably already been to Atlantis.
Yeah, that was, I think, the run probably before that, Tales.
Yeah, because Tales was Dark Horse, know, before Marvel took over. So so they were definitely like, both own the license, which is funny that they did this. It took so long. The other thing that's so weird is I'd love to go back and look at it. Like, I remember this happening in, I guess, 2004, 2005. And I'm like, why? Like, that was the dark era for Indiana Jones, right? Like, I don't think they've been trying to get the fourth one, you know, off the ground for lots of years. But I don't think there's any inklings at 2004, 2005 that it was actually going to go.
Oh, yeah.
We need to publish an Indiana Jones thing now. It's just so funny that that's just this random story in Star Wars Tales. Like, let's do Indiana Jones now for whatever reason.
Yeah. Well, he's never been in like a Arctic or tundra like environment, has he?
No, he's been
A little bit. Nepal, right?
So opening of Raiders is Nepal, where he meets Marion or reconnects. Yeah. Because you get the amazing scene where Tope burns his hand and has to then put it in ice to cool it off.
But there's a very 80s synthetic snow feel to that.
And it's also 5 minutes, right? Like, it's 5 minutes of the entire movie. We get in Temple of Doom there over the Himalayas when he jumps out the plane. There's that like snow down slide down the mountain in an inflatable raft.
Right. Oh, right.
Why? But again, like a minute, right? Like, but an extended snow scene with Indiana Jones would be is where you need to go.
I think. It's almost the next, that'd be great. Big mystery. Yeah. I would throw in some kind of Antarctica,
but
Arctic.
Are you getting grumpy 80 something year old Harrison Ford to
absolutely
be
not.
Shooting in snow weather for any experience time?
No, sorry, I mean, I just don't want, yeah. If you're going to globetrot, I think you got to do new things, show us new stuff. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I would just argue that snow, we haven't seen that really.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think, where in the world has he not gone? What mysteries has he not solved? You know, like,
yeah,
or so, looked into. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely oceanic sort of locations, yeah. Or underwater is one, Arctic's one. I'm trying to think like plateaus, buttes.
Yep.
I don't know. On the side of a mountain.
Yeah.
I don't, you know.
A little, like, it's funny, like, they, unlike Star Wars, like, they have hit pretty much every biome because they do so much globetrotting.
Yeah.
Then I'm like, mountains. I'm like, well, you get the mountains in Germany in Last Crusade. I'm like, ocean. There's like the scene on the boat and the submarine in Raiders. And then you get to see at the very beginning, Raiders Lost Ark, or, yeah. The names blend in.
Yeah.
So it's just like, it's so funny, but like to have an extended scene, like I hope the ocean stuff would be great if they do an extended scene. Yeah.
Japan would be fun.
I was just thinking.
Yeah, haven't done a lot. Right, they did India, and that was it. But nothing really. No Asian, other than Nepal. They spent a little. Opening scene in Nepal. But other than that, they have the opening in Hong Kong, right? But I think but Japan would be great. You're right. They haven't done anything in Japan.
Or like rural Japan would be fun.
Yeah. It's interesting. I think we're going to be in like space race territory is my guess in terms of setting and timing.
It looks like, it looks like space race. Is the 60s confirmed?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not confirmed, but based on what I've seen from the previews and timing, and I know they've not de-aged technologally, but I think Indiana Jones is technically 10 years younger than whatever Harrison Ford actually is in age.
Right.
Yeah.
So. Think he'd be in the 60s? Does he go to Woodstock?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's utterly fascinating stuff.
Yeah.
I am so excited for this new film, guys. I can't wait. I don't know if we should do like an extra podcast or just a bonus episode about our thoughts.
Yeah.
But like, it might be fun. It's Lucas's other big property. You know, Lucasfilm, Star Wars, Willow, Indiana Jones. Yeah, Indiana Jones.
Well, we're never going to cover Willow again.
Yeah, we'll never cover Willow again. Sadly, show for me was just like a fun popcorn show. Like I loved it.
And I'm not a hardcore Willow guy, but I really enjoyed that series for whatever reason.
Here's the thing: I could not stand it. Carly and I could not stand it. When we started it, and then four episodes in, we're like. This is great. Like, because they just committed. Like, they didn't, like, which is what I'm like, this is what you do. They knew what they were. They didn't change the tone, and it won me over. And then I'm like, this is wonderful. Like, after like four episodes, I'm like, yep, you know who you are.
Yeah, when something feels a little like anachronistic at first.
Yeah.
But then they just keep it up.
They keep doing it.
It works. It doesn't work when you're, you know, they're using
just
fun slang, modern slang. But like, if they keep doing it, you're like, it's like A Knight's Tale. Oh, it's
exactly.
It's like that. Yeah. So,
but you can't even watch it if you want to.
What, it's gone? They pulled it off.
Pulled an HBO Max and pulled it off of Disney.
Why?
Because they don't want to pay residuals to any of the people who are in it because it was such a bomb. And what they'll probably are going to do, which is what they're all doing.
The Willow the series. We're talking
Willow
John
series.
Kasdan.
Yeah. Oh, it did bad viewings.
And yeah.
The thing is,
Didn't get streamed. So they're monitoring.
It didn't get streamed enough, and then it also didn't. Here's the thing. We are at the collapse of streaming services. We're getting near to it because they make no money for making a show other than new subscribers.
Right.
And my guess is that like Willow got zero new subscribers. Like I watched it, but I already had a Disney Plus. So they didn't make any money off of me for watching that. And they probably didn't bring in any people. So they pull them down. And now what they're doing is what production companies, which is what Disney Plus is, used to do. They're now trying to license it to other networks to pay for it to show it so they can make some money that way.
Wow.
Which is how, and by
I
the way,
late
the guy,
stage capitalism, this is so stupid. I mean, to me, it's a compliment. It's just like to Disney, like, yes, maybe they didn't see a bump when it originally aired, but it's like that doesn't mean people aren't going to be fishing around six months in the future and being looking for something to watch and be like, you know what? I never saw that. And it's like that, you know, if there's nothing on Disney for you, there's nothing on Disney. You know, if that's not there, maybe they.
But it might buy them another month of that subscriber, right? Yeah. Who might have canceled their subscription of like, oh, wait, let's watch Willow and then cancel next month. Oh, wait, there's this other thing. Let's cancel next month.
That's enough to get you to Ahsoka or whatever. Yeah.
But it's all about the quarter, right? They have to show the things that are important. Right. The other thing that Zasloff is doing, which is hilarious, is did you hear his new thing? It's the guy who does HBO Max. This might be a little too tech talk for a second, but I think it's hilarious and I have to share it. Is he's like, you know what we should do? All of these streaming services should bundle together and everyone should pay one fee for it. Hey guys, you know what that's called?
Cable television.
They invented it in the 80s. We're just reinventing things.
I know. If they did it though, and I didn't have to give any money to Fox News, then it was just all those bundled services and it was a decent number.
Yeah.
Then I'd be
when in doubt, bundle.
No, I'm paying the same amount I did when I was doing cable. Just I have a million streaming services. I get billed on random days throughout. So it's fine. It's just people. It's just really funny of people trying to reinvent things.
While we're talking about business, can we jump back to Willow and Disney's erasure of Willow and sort of media that they have to pay for over time? I'm privy to some information about Disney and just how they conduct their operations. And it seems like they're always very character focused and trying to promote characters for the parks and for their brand and really putting splash pages of characters front and center.
Right. To jump in for a second, think about it.
Characters, and those characters are then exploited and merchandised in so many ways after
which,
but it also becomes a problem. I think the storytelling and the actual storytelling is affected by this as well, where legacy characters are being pulled back into modern stories because of the possible value that they have as a character.
Yeah.
And that dependency on legacy characters. In Willow, that whole thing leans very heavily on Mad Mardigan's sort of tale and his story. And I just found this to be a glaring issue within Disney's
structure
and focus and theory about how to market these stories and how to best maximize the potential of these stories. I don't know if it's like, rely on established characters and be risk adverse is better than just trying to establish a new character based on the franchise in a major way in which they can stand up on their own two feet. And I just think that going forward, Disney should really try to invent a character that feels like the IP instead of bringing back characters from the IP to establish the feel.
I think that's really like you really did synthesize a lot of what I had been noticing, because like the thing on like I run the Instagram. So when Disney Plus is advertising like for Star Wars, right, or even Star Wars does this every week, there's a new episode of whatever streaming. The only thing they put up is a new character poster every week. It's always a character poster, right? Of like, look at this new character. And I'm like, that's great. I didn't know the frog lady from episode 2 of The Mandalorian needed her own poster. I mean, I love that. Great. It's great. It's really cool design, but it's just like, what about the storytelling?
But they probably looked at metrics and like average gift shared was the frog lady. And they were like, let's throw that up. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost it's fascinating to me. It's almost like the stories are second to characters. And don't the characters tell the story? Isn't the story what everyone's working to put out there? Like, I don't know. It's fascinating. It is.
It's really interesting. Yeah. And I wonder if like, isn't there a way to do both? And maybe what Star Wars is doing with their movie slate is interesting, right? Two of the movies that are coming out, two of the three, are really focused on established characters, right? One is the culmination of the Mandoverse. So that's all going to be all established, all callbacks, all everything. The new Jedi Order is hopefully going to introduce a lot of new characters, but it's hanging its backbone on Rey. It sounds like, right? It's going to be Rey-centered, which I'm like all for.
Yeah,
but again, it's an established character. The third one, though, is the one where they cannot have an established character. They have to create all new characters, which is why I'm very excited about it.
Yeah.
So isn't that what you do? If you want to stay alive, don't you keep doing stuff with established characters because that keeps some of the fan base there, but also try to build new, because then, by the way, if those characters hit, you now have the established characters you can build around and the new characters you can build around. You keep building and building and building and building, as opposed to it's diminishing returns if you only focus on established characters.
Yeah.
All you do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or just you lean too heavily on it. I mean, like you said, Adam, I think they deserve their, you know, fair share of storytelling and being reintroduced to the story and the narrative. But don't lean so heavily. I think Willow was an example of a Disney property that leaned too heavily on a character, a legacy character. Yeah. And we almost like it, they almost, it was almost like a Mephisto type, you know, culture moment where it was like, when do we see Val Kilmer?
I know, like, which I kept going, and which is frustrating to be with you. I'm like, you understand it's not going to happen. Like
I know.
It's not going to happen. And
why shape the narrative like that?
Don't know. I don't know if they thought they might be able to get him in.
Kilmer showed up in Top Gun Maverick on maybe.
That's
so,
true.
That's what I was thinking.
That's the precedent.
Yeah.
Talk about that movie, man. That movie is a wonderful film, but that is someone who's just like, wait, there's a new character. I'm going to push that kid aside. And this is all about me, a 70-year-old man flying a fighter jet. And this is the person who has watched that movie 5 times. And thoroughly enjoy his stuff.
I'm
going to
go watch it right now, actually.
I might go watch it tonight again.
I'm one of those people who's not, I don't really see the light when it comes to Top Gun Maverick. So I get it. Wild. It's great. I mean, nostalgia. Fantastic.
Okay. That's the thing, right? But, I mean, I admit it has no cultural value. It is not creative or inventive at all, but boy, is it a movie.
It is absolutely a movie.
It is just a movie that is like the perfect encapsulation of its time. It made me no longer hate Miles Teller, which is a real impressive feat because I did not like him for a long time.
Right on.
Yeah, I just didn't understand anything that was going on. I was like, why are we flying this mission? I just didn't. Fair I enough. Was like, is this necessary? I didn't know what was necessary.
But
I didn't
really
know. Hey, try not to think about the geopolitics. They don't really.
No. I mean, I'm sure you watched the first one, but so here's the wild thing is I'm in a family where also I'm loving this episode. We're just all over the place. It's great. I love everyone enjoy.
We're getting all our pop culture directions.
I know. Ben's just like, you could have one episode to just talk about non-Star Wars stuff. I grew up in a family where I think we watched Top Gun and that was it. Like, it wasn't a thing in our household, right? Like, it was just like, I was aware. I was aware that was really popular. Carly, my wife, grew up in a Top Gun family. That was the agreed upon. Like, they could.
I saw Top Gun and I went to air shows and I loved jets. I was all about jets. I just, like, for me, it's like, if I'm thinking about a jet fighter epic, I don't think it's been made yet, honestly.
No.
This is a video. I don't know. It's almost like a vibey.
Yeah.
Like, hang out at the Air Force Base and compete against each other sort of movie.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
it's a sports film.
Yeah, it's a sports.
That's why it works. Really is a sports film.
Yeah,
it's the same way like Chef. The movie Chef with Jon Favreau is a sports film, and that's why it works. It's a sports film. It's all a sports film. It's someone who gets knocked off his high horse and has to come back through the ranks. It's Rocky, but with cooking and a food truck. The thing about Top Gun is like Carly grew up with it because the four of them could only agree on that movie a lot for like family movie night was Top Gun. And so it was one of those things where she brought it into the relationship and I rewatched it with her and I'm like, I enjoy the film. I didn't dislike it as much. But you understand that Maverick is the villain of that film, right? Like if you watch Top Gun, Maverick is the bad guy.
Yes.
He's absolutely. The Iceman.
Goose
Iceman
is actually the hero. Yeah.
Goose and Iceman is the hero. Iceman. Yeah. Val Kilmer is the hero of that movie. He's the guy following rules, doing everything. Like Maverick gets Goose killed. Maverick sucks in that film. He's a bad dude. He's a bad guy. And what I like about Maverick, the sequel, is like he's kind of learned his lesson. Like he actually like there's weird character development where he's like figured like he's redone everything he did in the first film.
Yeah, it's a great answer to the first film, too, I think, which is fantastic. It's kind of like he's not going to let that happen again.
Yeah.
And that's great. That always works.
All right. So what are we talking about now?
Star Wars
thing. That's right.
That's great. I think we kind of covered it. Light one this week. We'll be back at you next week with more, covering more stories, discussing more current Star Wars stories as we're sort of catching up. But this felt prescient.
We promised much more Star Wars next week. We just needed to
get this one out.
Important things happening in this pop culture world.
Yeah, hopefully we won't get too much flack from Grex for this episode.
This won't super be the chill.
I am seeing a lot of red on this memo.
Wait, why is that email in all caps? Okay, I'll read that later. This was a blast talking to you. Short one this week. Looking forward to talking to you again next week. Marcus Smart, you'll be a Celtic forever. Memphis, take care of him for us.
I have no idea what's happening. Yes, I co-sign.
We will talk to you next week. May the force be with all of you.
This is Grex Kondak signing off. For the latest breaking news, follow at Core World News on Twitter and Instagram. Thank you and good night.
Remember, the Force will be with you always.